ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 7, Text Number 17. Before I begin, I just want to mention that we are presently going through a summary study of various incarnations of Krishna. And each one of these incarnations have something very unique and very different to express and dramatize through his actions for us in the process of destroying demons and enlightening devotees. That's his only business, really, in coming to help us and to get rid of those who hurt us in the process of our trying to help ourselves. I'm going to read through the verse straight through. We have a lot of material to cover, and I hope we can do that within the 25 minutes I'm given. So, Jayan Gunar Avarajo Pyadite Sutanam. Lokan Vichakrama Iman Yad Atha Diyagya. Shmam Bhamanena Jagrahe Tripada Chalenam. Yachnyam Rite Paticharan Prabhu Bir Nachalya. Jayan Gunar Avarajo Pyadite Sutanam. Lokan Vichakrama Iman Yad Atadi Yagya. Shmam Vamanena Jagrahe Tripada Chalenam. Yatnam Rite Pachacharan Prabhu Bir Nachalya. Jayan Gunar Avarajo Pyadite Sutanam. Lokan Vichakrama Iman Yad Atha Diyagya. Shmam Vamanena Jagrahe Tripada Chalena. Yachnam Rite Paticharan Prabhu Bir Nachalya. Please chant. Jagrahe Tripada Chalena. Yacham Rite Patacharan Prabhu Bir. Yeah. Shmam Vamanena Jagratri Padachalena Ladies, please. Anyone else? Synonyms? Jayan, the greatest. Gunai, by qualities. Avaraja, transcendental. Excuse me. Api, although he is, sorry, Api, although he is so. Adite, of Aditi. Sutanam, of all the sons known as Adityas, they are the sons of Aditi and Kashyapa Muni. Lokan, all the planets, Vichakrame, surpassed Iman in this universe. Yat, sorry. Yes. One who, Ata, therefore, Adiyagya, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Shmam, all the lands, Vamanena, in the incarnation of Vamana. Jagrahe, accepted. Tripada, three steps. Chalena, by pretension. Jachnyam, begging. Rite, without. Pati, charan, passing over the right path. Prabhu, by authorities. Na, never to be. Shalyaha, to be bereft of. Does everybody know what the word bereft means? If you don't, raise your hand. So everybody knows? Sure? Can you tell me what bereft means, Prabhu? So why don't you raise your hand when I said? You don't have to be ashamed to not know something. You do have to be ashamed to not admit that you don't know something. There's no problem. There's no curse. Who else doesn't know what the word bereft means? Okay. It's okay. I want everybody to understand these wonderful words. Otherwise, we're missing the meaning. Okay, so bereft. What, anyone else? Okay. Bereft means to be without. He's bereft of his hat. He doesn't have a hat. He's bereft of knowledge. He doesn't have any understanding or knowledge. Okay, we got it all now? Bereft means you don't know. Okay, or you're free of something, or you're empty of something. Okay, thank you very much. Again, this is not to put anybody down. It's rather to bring others up so that we all can understand these great words that Prabhupada has given us. Translation. The Lord, although transcendental to all material modes, still surpassed all the qualities of the sons of Aditi, known as the Adityas. The Adityas are the demigods. You have the sun god, you have the moon god, the air god, the any other gods? Water god. So all those are different gods, and they come from Aditi and Kashyapa Muni. The Lord appeared as the youngest son of Aditi. And because that means he was the last son born. There was a reason for that, excuse me. And because he surpassed all the planets of the universe, he is the supreme personality of Godhead. On the pretense of asking for a measurement of 3 footsteps of land, he took away all the lands of Bali Maharaj. He asked simply because without begging, no authority can take one's rightful possession. In other words, if you go into a person's house and start taking things, it's called stealing. But if you go to the house and you said, you know, I like that chair there, would you like to dispose of it in my hands? And if he says, well, yeah, I was thinking of giving it to the junk store. So you can have a junk store of this? Yeah, you want it? You can have. So it's proper. It's right because he asked permission. And that's a very important principle in human get-together or human intercourse. So, on the pretense of asking, I already said that, he asked simply because without begging, no authority can take one's rightful possession. Purport. The history of Bali Maharaj and his charity to Vamanadeva is described in the 8th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Bali Maharaj conquered all the planets of the universe by rightful possession. In other words, he approached a king and said, I'd like to fight with you, and I'd like to get your kingdom, or the items, or the jewels, or the riches, or the wealth of your kingdom. Would you like to fight? Because if you don't fight, I'll just take them. Remember, I've come to you in a proper way, and I've given you the right to reject it. So if he says, okay, I'll fight, then they have a fight, and the one who wins gets the land. So Vali Maharaj, as we will see, was a very powerful king. He won everything, and he owned the whole universe. So he conquered all the planets of the universe by rightful possession. A king can conquer other kings by strength, and such possession is considered to be rightful. So Vali Maharaj possessed all the lands of the universe, and he happened to be charitably disposed toward the Brahmins. So you have some good qualities in there before, besides just wanting to take lands from other persons. The Lord therefore pretended to be a beggar Brahmin, and he asked Vali Maharaj for a measurement of 3 footsteps of land. How did that come about? The way it came about is that there was a big ceremony, a ritual, being held in an arena, Bali's arena. And his guru was there, Shukracharya. And so they were doing the ladling of the ghee and doing the mantras, which was going on. And then suddenly appeared in the far side of the arena a little dwarf, very tiny and very beautiful. And one of the things that distinguished him from just about everybody there is the glow that was coming from his head, from his eyes, from his hands. He was not just a Brahmin, but he was an amazing-looking Brahmin, a Brahmin whom you couldn't help asking, who is this person? And that's exactly what Vali Maharaj did say. He said, look at him. I've never seen anybody glowing like that. I'm going to find out. So the Brahmin came, who was happens to be Vamanadeva, and he came forward, and then he said, what happened is that Vali Maharaj, he went to him and he said a few very beautiful, uplifting, admiring things about him. Who are you? Where you come from? And why have you come to this place? So Vamanadeva, he didn't say much. All he said is, or indicated, is he came to see the ceremony. Actually, he had a bigger mission in mind. His mission was to take away all the property, all the planets, all the accomplishments, or all the achievements, all the acquirements that Vali Maharaj had. And why was he doing this? Well, because the sons of Aditi, who were the demigods, they had been defeated by Vali Maharaj, and their lands and their planets and their property, everything had been taken in a fair way. So she was separated from her sons. Now, any of you mothers, if you get separated from your sons sometimes for even 10 minutes, it could be a lot. And then again, it could all be also a great relaxation, depending upon how the day is going. So what happens is that she wanted her sons back. And there was no way she could get those sons back unless somebody more powerful than Bali would approach Bali and either fight with him and take all the lands and take the planets back. So therefore, it was decided that this could be done if she had a son who was very, very powerful. And that, so she and Kashyapa Muni united, and they had this son whom we call Vamana. I believe Vamana, the word Vamana means dwarf. Does it, Archana, you know, does it mean diminutive or something like that? Okay, so it means dwarf. And he was also very charming looking, as I've already mentioned. Kind of huggable type of thing. You see this, he's small. He's only about 4 feet tall. He's not a normal sized person. So sometimes one may think if a person is small that he necessarily is not too strong because he's little. You can throw him down. Not so in this case. He was holding up the whole universe and then some. okay? Many other universes as well. So Bali Maharaj, I've already said this, I'm sorry. The Lord therefore pretended to be a beggar Brahman, and he asked Bali Maharaj for a measurement of 3 footsteps of land. So Bali Maharaj says, you want just 3 footsteps of land? That's all? He says, I can give you villages. I can give you houses. I can give you big gardens. I can give you wives. I can give you something more sumptuous, more valuable. And you just ask for 3 steps of land? Come on. You're not a very intelligent Brahmin, are you? He doesn't know who he is. So Vaman said, no, that's all I want, this 3 steps of land. He says, but I want to give you... No, that's okay. 3 steps of land. He doesn't know what he's getting into. So Shukracharya, who happened to be the guru of Bali Maharaj, he says, no, don't give him anything. So he says, why? He says, I've already promised that I'll give him whatever he wants. And he only wanted just 3 steps of land, so what's the big deal? Don't give him. He's going to take your whole kingdom. He's going to take the universe. He's the Supreme Lord. Watch out. So, very interesting. Sometimes I get mixed up with these names. But anyway, Bali Maharaj, he said to his guru, and this is very, normally this would be considered a great offense. That was sanctioning just what I said. So that would normally be considered a great offense. You know, your guru says, don't do it, and you say, you're going to do it. He says, why do you want to do this? He said, because I made a promise. And when you make a promise to a Brahmin, you can't just walk away from the promise and ignore it and disregard it and think it's of nothing, that you can say anything. So Shukracharya, he said, well, wait a minute. When you made that promise, you didn't say the word Om. That would have sanctified it. He says, no. Promise means you fulfill what you state. If I say I'm going to give you a chapati, I got to get a chapati and give it to you. I can't just give you any old toast. I have to give you actual chapati. So that's called fulfilling your promise. And if you can't fulfill the promise, you have to go to the person to whom you made the promise. And if you've made that promise, you have to explain why you can't fulfill it. And if he says, well, that's okay, look, I understand, then give me whatever you can. In other words, the word, the promise, the truth is very important. And if we don't stick to that, what kind of a world would we have? Nobody would be believed. I make a promise, I don't keep it. You make a promise, you don't keep it. Everybody's committing lies. Everybody is doing untruth. So what you have is chaos. You don't have order. Because when nobody tells the truth, then nothing gets done the way it's supposed to get done. And the right, and what happens when that happens is that you get conflict, you get wars, you get friction. You get people saying, you said that you were going to do, but you haven't done it. And the other person says, no, I never said that. But you did. This person, he saw you, and he's going to lie also. Didn't he say that? No, he didn't say that. So lies and lies and lies, which result in lots of conflict, as I just said, and ultimately fighting, ultimately wars, and ultimately lots of deaths, because nobody wants to state the truth. They want to appear in such a way that it gives them some comeuppance, or it gives them some status, or it gives them some greatness. That's why we lie. For example, the one person I know, she tells lots of lies. She doesn't even know that she's lying. And not knowing that she's lying, this is it's a mental disorder. A person thinks the truth is a lie, and thinks the lie is the truth. Why is that? Because the person is lying for one very important reason. If he doesn't lie, he will be looked upon as being low, small, not very smart, or not very able. And he wants to have prestige. He wants to look big. He wants esteem. Esteem means looking big, looking great, looking applaudable. So that's one of the reasons that people lie, to conceal either their ignorance or their status or their possession or their purposefulness. Whatever it is, they want to look big. So they will lie in order to have that esteem. And it's unfortunate because every time you lie, you contribute to the destruction of a particular society for reasons I've already stated. So, I'm going to the next page now. The Lord as the proprietor. Is that right, Archer? Okay, great. Yeah, so I wanted to make this point very clear that ideally we should not lie. But sometimes there is a time, like to save a person's life, it may be best to lie because life is better than death. Because with life, you can use it ultimately to develop purity, self-realization, self-control, and good society so that everyone in the society can benefit from it and, again, ultimately reach a stage or a state of self-realization which will free them from all these foolish, nonsensical conflicts which come up as a result of wanting to show oneself to be big, to be great, to be grand, to be glorious, to be high. This is the foolish nonsense of trying to be the Lord of all I survey. Prabhupada mentions that many times in his books, that we come into this world from the spiritual world, we fall from the spiritual world, because we want to be like the Supreme Lord. The Supreme Lord is adored. He's looked up to. He's applauded. He's obeyed. He has power. He can look at anything and take it because it's his. So people in the spiritual world may, since we all have the quality of admiration can turn into envy. When I admire something, wow, that's beautiful, that's great, that's grand, that's glorious. But then what if I want to have the same? The Lord has a beautiful necklace, or the Lord has some beautiful dhoti, or the Lord has some beautiful chariot, and I want to have one of those. Well, I have to have some wealth. Therefore, as a result, a person may then want to leave the spiritual world to be a Lord, but where can he be a Lord? So the Lord himself created this world for those who want to be his competitors. So we come to this world, and when we come here, we look to build our prestige. We look to build our grandeur. We look to build our applause. We look to build anything that will make us look big and great and powerful and beautiful and, as I said, wealthy. All these things bring to an individual a certain amount of admiration. When they have that admiration, they feel bigger and better and higher and greater than everybody else, and that's what they want. Unfortunately, or fortunately, however, or whatever angle of vision we look at it, it lasts for a very short time. Fame can last for a second. It can last for a few days. You win an award. You have some fame. Next week, somebody else wins the award. And you lose your fame. It's temporary. So why should we become very enamored of something that we're going to, by its nature, lose? So if we're going to lose it, then we might as well not care for it. If you have to have position in order to gain some money, or you may need it to achieve some position, well, okay, but don't be enamored of it. Don't develop a feeling about it that it's so great, it's so wonderful, I'm so amazing. We should never have those things because we'll only be miserable when those things disappear. And when they disappear, what happens is that we are bereft Remember that word? We're bereft of that particular article. So when we are bereft of it, we don't have it, and we don't have it, we become poor. And when we are poor, we feel lowly. When we feel lowly, it means that there are other people higher and greater and grander, and we want to be there, but we're not there. So our godliness, so-called, has disappeared. And in its place has come something which is the last thing we would want. Okay? So, therefore, no sense being enamored of something that we're going to, by its nature, disappear. There's no harm in being wealthy. Prabhupada was very wealthy, but he used it in the loving service of Krishna. And by using it in the loving service of Krishna, he was blessed by Krishna, and in being blessed by Krishna, he was ever presently blissful, peaceful, happy, fulfilled, satisfied, and eager to always have others or help others achieve those same results. So wealth could be used for something good and something beneficial and something helpful. Christian sects, they look down upon wealth. They think of it as being evil. For example, the Franciscans. St. Francis, he prided himself on rags, wearing rags. There's no greatness in wearing a rag or wearing a silken raiment. They both cover. It's only when we have this idea that we're better because we have the silk. This is false. And when we get rid of the falseness, you can have it, you can use it, and forget about it. I go on to the next sentence. The Lord, as the proprietor of everything, could take from Bali Maharaj all the land he possessed. Because he's the Lord. The Lord owns everything. He can walk into any place and just take it. If anybody wants to resist him, the Lord can simply put his hand out and paralyze him. Can stop him if he wants to. That's what God means. He means he's all-powerful, all-knowing. But he did not do so because Bali Maharaj possessed all those lands by king's rights. In other words, he fought fairly. He didn't just take. So, therefore, as it says here, Vamana Dev, he paid respect to the human idea of respecting another person's rights. And that was very important for him, not to just take it like a thief. And he was setting a good example by doing that. When Bali Maharaj was asked by Lord Vamana for such small charity, Bali Maharaj's spiritual master, I said this before, namely Shukracharya, objected to this proposal because he knew that Vamana Dev was Vishnu himself pretending to be a beggar. Bali Maharaj did not agree to abide by the order of his spiritual master when he understood that the beggar was Vishnu himself. That would be a super mad elephant offense to go against his word to the Supreme Lord. And he at once agreed to give him in charity the land requested. Three steps of land. But it was not known at this time what he meant by those three steps of land. So what happened was that when he took the first step, he made himself extremely tall, large, high, and with his big feet, big legs, he covered the lower material universe and the lower planets, middle planets. And then with the next step, the second step, he covered all the upper planets and even kicked a hole in the covering of the universe. And from that hole came the water, which later became the Ganga or the Ganges water. Why did it come? Because that's where Lord Vishnu rests on it. Mahavishnu lies on that particular area. So, I've gone way over. I'm 5 minutes over, am I not? because my watch could be wrong too. But I don't think it is. Is 5 minutes over by 8:35? Okay, I'll try to wrap this up as fast. I want to at least finish. Oh, there isn't that much. Okay, at least for the reading of this. So, continuing this, by this agreement, Lord Vamana covered all the lands of the universe with his first two steps, and then asked Bali Maharaj where to place the third step. Now, it's very interesting, and I have to take just a few moments to explain this because it's so nice. That's the best way I can explain it. So what happened was that Vamanadeva said to Bali Maharaj, look, you promised me three steps, and you've only given me two steps. Where am I going to put my third step? Now, remember, Bali Maharaj was a warrior. He was not so concerned about, you know, etiquette and so much. He was a fighter. He had no qualms about killing if he had to, if it was done in a proper, legal fashion, as it's mentioned here. So what we have here is Vamanadeva asked Bali Maharaj, you promised me three steps and all you've given me is two, so you haven't kept your promise. How are you going to keep your promise? So Bali Maharaj was wondering, where's he going to fit? There's no place to put his feet. He said, if you will please bow your head, I will place my feet on your head, which is the only place I can think of as being the best place that I can ever put them. And that's exactly what happened. So where to place the third step? Bali Maharaj was very glad to receive the Lord's remaining step upon his head. Yeah, so I think I mixed it up a little bit. As it says, Lord Vamana covered all the lands of the universe with. So, yes, so Vamanadeva, he took his foot and put it on Bali Maharaj's head. What could be a better place than that? How did he know that this was such a great, that this dwarf, of course, he was shining and glowing, but how did he know it would be so great? The fact of the matter is Bali Maharaj is a grandson of Prahlad Maharaj. Now, Prahlad Maharaj, when he was asked by Lord Narasingadeva to ask for a blessing, he said to Narasingadeva, please bless my father to be God realized. He should not have to come back again. So Lord Narasingadeva said, you don't have to worry about that. Just on the basis of all your actions, your thoughts, your deeds, your father will become God realized. But from your family going back 11 generations, they also are going to be God realized. And your family going forward 11 generations will also be God realized. So they have all become blessed with spirituality, latent or dormant. That means it's there, but it hasn't sprouted yet. And that's exactly what has happened. This is a very wonderful scene where Bali Maharaj, who has tremendous spirituality in him, but it hasn't manifested yet. But by the agency, the association, the togetherness of Bali Maharaj and Vamanadeva awakened that higher level of consciousness in Bali. So Bali is becoming spiritualized by the agency, by the association, by the kindness of the Lord, Vamanadeva. And therefore, what happens is that he's being transferred. He had the higher consciousness to know where to put his feet. And so what has happened is that he received, I'm getting a little mixed up on this, please forgive me. Bali Maharaj, he placed his feet where? Yeah, Vamanadeva placed his feet, I'm sorry about that. Vamanadeva, he had placed his feet, Bali Maharaj, he helped me out if I'm getting a little stumped. on Balia Maharaj's head. Yeah, that's what I thought, yeah. Yeah, so therefore, Balia Maharaj got a great super blessing. And that super blessing was the pivotal point in his life, because this would be a total change. And as the story goes on, we find out that the Lord has reserved a place in Sutala, which is down in the lower planets, which is even more opulent than Indra's place. I forgot what it's called. But anyway, it was more opulent. And who would be his doorkeeper? It would be the Supreme Lord. What could you have better than that? You have the Lord as your doorkeeper, and you've got a place which has been made super beautiful by Krishna's arrange, by the Lord. Yes, this is all set to happen. And so one thing we have to remember is that the Lord was very happy with Balia Maharaj, since he agreed to do the bidding, to do the will of the Lord, rather than just acting in a mechanical manner and just go by what his guru said. The guru, now guru is next to God, but in this case, that guru was not acting in the will of God. It was against the will of God, and therefore he had every right to not accept the order that was given to him. Now, that takes a lot of a very high level of discrimination, which means he had undergone some transformation already to be able to make that decision. Because an ordinary devotee would say, well, the guru, I'm going to follow what he says. But he knew that he had to go to the level that he has been urged to, and he has now become a very great, wonderful servant of the Lord. Sorry I have gone over this. If anyone has a question, you want to come up over here, because I don't want to hold any. Pardon? I didn't finish the purport. My apologies. Thanks for warning me. Okay, give me the. Oh, I thought I have to go on to the next page. That's why I thought it was the last page. Okay. Universe with his first two steps, and then ask Balia Maharaj where to place the third step. Balia already said it, though. But to place the third step, Balia Maharaj was very glad to receive the Lord's remaining step upon his head. And thus, Balia Maharaj, instead of losing everything he possessed, was blessed by the Lord's becoming his constant companion and doorman. So, by giving everything to the cause of the Lord, one does not lose anything, but he gains everything that he could never otherwise expect. It's a little like that poem that I sometimes have said in my classes. My dear Lord Krishna, I am nothing except what you make me. I have nothing except what you give me. I know nothing except what you teach me. I do nothing except what you enable me. And I want nothing except pure love of your lotus feet, for then I will have everything, because, and then some, because I will have your lotus feet. And that's all. This ends today's talk. My apologies for going overboard, and I pray that everyone will get the feet of the Lord on their head. Hare Krishna.